We're talking about the work of the ACLU of Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. The American Civil Liberties Union is involved in litigation and activism on a number of fronts. Think criminal justice reform, voting rights, immigration, privacy, technology, police accountability, transgender health care, the list goes on. The ACLU of Wisconsin has 13,000 members. We will look at some of its legal work. What civil rights issues are most pressing to you? What issues would you like to see the ACLU of Wisconsin focus on this year? We're at 800-642-1234. Chris Ott has been executive director of the ACLU of Wisconsin since 2017, and before that, he was with the ACLU of Massachusetts for a decade. Prior to that, he led Fair Wisconsin, an LGBTQ rights organization. Chris, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning, Kate. Thanks for this chance to talk. We really appreciate it, especially on an important occasion like MLK Day.
Yes, Martin Luther King Jr. Day. Let's start with immigration. This is one of the ACLU's top priorities. And there's a bill in the state Senate that passed out a committee last month that requires local communities to cooperate with immigration and customs officials. It would penalize cities, towns, and villages that have sanctuary policies. What would Senate Bill 151 do to the relationship between police and immigrant communities?
We think it would really drive a wedge between police and immigrant communities, and we think that legislation like this is exactly the wrong way to go. We need to foster cooperation, and this bill would increase the level of fear and anxiety that people might have about going to the police if they need help or if they have information about something that's happened.
Yeah, so the bill's sponsor, Republican State Senator Steve Noss, said that municipalities have no right to defy federal rules and that this bill targets people in the country illegally who have committed a crime. Is this legislation basically more about keeping communities in line, you know, squarely compliant with the law?
Well, one of the things that we have been working on here in Wisconsin and across the country over the last couple of years, is letting local authorities know that they don't have to comply with requests from ICE unless ICE has gotten a judicial warrant for, you know, for someone's arrest, for example. And so, a lot of the conversation around this has actually been about communities exercising their right to say no, to decline these requests, and to say no to doing favors to ICE.
Do you think sanctuary cities offer genuine sanctuary?
Well, that's a good question and a broad question. I think that given the new threats to immigrants that we've seen over the last few years, and the way that those have become actual dangers, not merely threats. You know, we've seen ICE really sort of stepping up the arrests of immigrants, deportations, going up, things like that. You know, a lot of people do not like this and want to see us take a more humane approach as a country. And so we think that communities are well within their rights to offer this kind of help.
When you look inward at the ACLU, are you seeking any changes in state policy that you feel would improve conditions in Wisconsin for immigrants, aside from this particular Senate bill that you're opposed to?
Sure. We are, we've been looking at a variety of measures. You know, one of them, there are a variety of things that we could do to make things easier. We could... It's a bad idea, for example, not to provide a way to get driver's licenses for immigrants. And so we want to see reforms like that. And in general, what we are trying to do is to slow down or stop this deportation machine that has been working away in our country for years, not just in the last 3 years or so of the Trump administration, but since before that. And having that feed into our criminal justice system as well, or working alongside it. You know, one thing that we did last year that we are very proud of is that we helped to stop a new ICE detention center that was planned or was in the planning stages in the town of New Richmond, Wisconsin. This would have kind of brought some of these horrific images or the terrible treatment of immigrants that people have been seeing in other states to a state like Wisconsin. And so we worked with local people or with the community in New Richmond to stop it.
On this MLK Day, we're talking about civil rights issues in Wisconsin with Chris Ott. He's executive director of the Wisconsin chapter of the ACLU. What civil rights issues are you most concerned about here in Wisconsin? What are the biggest obstacles to realizing Martin Luther King Jr.'s dreams? What gives you hope for the future? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So, Chris, last week, Republican lawmakers proposed a get tough on crime package of bills. And let's listen to Representative Joe Sanfilippo talking at a press conference in West Allis.
Crime has been on the rise here in Wisconsin. It's eating out bigger and bigger portions of our local budgets, and it really has become a problem.
So, Chris, what do you make of Republicans wanting to, quote unquote, get tough on crime here?
We've seen this before, and it hasn't worked. The ACLU over the past couple of years has really made a high priority of criminal justice reform. We think that we need to cut our prison population, eliminate the racial disparities in our system, and move to treatment that actually works instead of simply locking people up in cages. And so what we saw in this proposal last week was a move in exactly the wrong direction toward this kind of failed so-called tough on crime approach that a lot of states have moved away from and that we hope Wisconsin will as well.
So one proposal in this package wants to expand public access to online court records so people could see more information from the time of arrest to the final resolution. Do you support an expansion of online court information?
I'll have to look into that particular issue. What we focused on when we saw this proposal was things like the harshness of sentences. That is something that has really been driving people into our criminal justice system and has given us this problem that we have across the country and in Wisconsin. You know, the United States incarcerates more of its people than any other country in the world by percentage. And in Wisconsin, we're an outlier as well. We have one of the highest rates of incarceration, and we have some of the worst racial disparities in our criminal justice system. And so that's, anything that is feeding into that problem really raises concerns with us.
Yeah, Wisconsin's prison population is expected to reach 25,000 inmates by next year. Is there anything specifically legislation you think that would turn that around and start to reduce that population?
Absolutely. And I think it's also helpful to sort of compare Wisconsin with other states. We are just a real outlier on the global scale. I mentioned that just a moment ago. But if we look at our neighbor, Minnesota and Wisconsin have about the same number of people overall. And we have a lot of demographic similarities in the racial makeup of our population. And the difference, but there is an incredible difference when you look at incarceration. They have fewer than 10,000 people in their prison system, and we have more than 23,000 right now. As you said, it looks like we could be headed for 25,000. And that's because we've stuck with this so-called tough-on-crime approach that is really just destroying lives, destabilizing communities, failing to make us any safer. And so we want to see things like an end to practices that are sending people back into prison for rules violations instead of for committing new crimes.
Well, let's pause right there with Chris Ott. He heads up the ACLU of Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions, 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're talking about the work of the American Civil Liberties Union of Wisconsin here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. The ACLU works in the courts, it works in legislatures, it works on community projects to promote individual rights and liberties. One example, it's been a year and a half since the ACLU of Wisconsin settled a lawsuit with Milwaukee over police stop and frisk practices. That lawsuit, filed in 2017, accused police of routinely stopping thousands of Black and Latino residents without cause or suspicion. So how is policing in your community today? Do you work on issues involving the ACLU? What should our state do to advance individual rights? Join in, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. And the ACLU Wisconsin Executive Director Chris Ott stays with us. So, Chris, the ACLU settled its lawsuit against Milwaukee for its police department stop and frisk policy in 2018. Is the city complying with the settlement? Are Black and Latino residents there noticing a difference in how police treat them?
Well, we hope so, but we also know that this is going to take time, and that as important as the settlement that we reached with the city of Milwaukee was, the follow-up is going to be at least as important to that. And so, you know, we are working on that in a variety of ways. There is an outside monitor, for instance, that is checking on the progress of this periodically, and so, you know, we are working to make sure that follow through happens, and that the training that the police committed to providing is being given, that they're releasing the data that they said that they would release, things like that.
How often does the outside monitor check in and give a report?
I need to check on that. I don't remember offhand how many times or how often that is, but I know that that work has been happening.
The ACLU also recently came out against another Republican proposal. It's Assembly Bill 617 that would impose harsher penalties on people who commit disorderly conduct while wearing a mask. Why are you against this bill?
We're again, you know, all across the board, you know, what we see here, you know, much too often are these harsher penalties for this, harsher penalties for that. And, you know, we think that that's just the wrong approach. In this particular case, we were concerned or have concerns about this cracking down on a form of expression, and also sort of the you know, unequal ways that this might be applied. You know, this one, the prominence of this one did kind of take us by surprise, and we think it's another step in the wrong direction, or it could be.
But a pushback here, is there a danger in allowing people to wear masks because it makes investigating crimes and holding people accountable much harder?
Well, this is a complicated issue, and legislation like this, actually, at least some of it, had its origins in work against the Ku Klux Klan. You know, we need to make sure that we don't go too far in the other direction. You know, yes, there can be reasons that that you would want to control this, but at the same time, in the context that we're in here, in Wisconsin, we have some real concerns about this bill.
If you're just joining us on this MLK Day, we're exploring civil rights issues with Chris Ott. He's executive director of the ACLU chapter in Wisconsin. It's the nation's oldest and largest civil liberties organization. What issues would you like to see the ACLU of Wisconsin focus on in the coming year? What do you think would do the most toward creating an equitable society? Join in the conversation, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Let's look at voting rights here, Chris. This is obviously a big election year. A lot of people are concerned about both election security and voting rights. How is the ACLU working on this issue?
Well, overall, we think that we should make it easier to vote, not harder. And so, you know, we're concerned about measures that seem to be putting obstacles in the way of people exercising their right to vote. You know, that includes things like Wisconsin's voter ID law, which we challenged as soon as that went into effect. And, you know, we've also been keeping a close eye on this this attempted voter purge that's been playing out in Wisconsin over the last, month or so.
Purging the voter rolls, more than 200,000 names, which is stayed right now. Is that correct?
Right.
This year marks the 10th anniversary of the or 100th anniversary, excuse me, of the ACLU. And the organization through the decades has taken some controversial stands. In 1977, it defended neo-Nazi rights to march in Skokie, Illinois. And then we saw in 2017, it defended conservative rights to hold the Unite the Right march in Charlottesville. And that was where a counter-protester was killed. Why do you think it's important for the ACLU to take these stands?
You're right that we are no strangers to controversy through our entire 100-year history now, and we take these stands very selectively. We take them because we think that if we can defend the rights of speech that is unpopular, that that makes it easier to defend everyone's rights. It's that there's not necessarily a one size fits all for these cases. We do look at them really carefully individually, but that is the idea that if the government can control the speech rights of one particular group, then that gives them a better chance of controlling it for other groups or for everyone.
Well, let's take a call now. Eddie is joining us from Green Bay this morning. Hi, Eddie.
Hey, morning. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great, great. I'm calling. Chris just mentioned a little bit about the Ku Klux Klan, but also I'm wondering about white supremacist groups and other groups like that. Nationally, there's been a rise, uptick in that those groups' activity. So in honor of MLK, I'm just wondering what's the status of those groups here in Wisconsin and the role the ACLU plays in monitoring or attacking, challenging those kinds of groups.
Thank you so much, Eddie, for the question. Chris.
Right. Thank you, Eddie, for that question. The ACLU doesn't work directly on tracking those groups. There are other groups like the Southern Poverty Law Center that do that kind of work. We leave that to them. But we have been really concerned about the way that more extreme rhetoric, such as from the Trump administration, could be contributing to a rise in violence and hate crimes. We are worried that when you have this kind of extreme rhetoric about immigrants, for example, that is contributing to to actual violence against people.
Chris, what made you want to lead the Wisconsin chapter of the ACLU?
Well, I had worked as what got mentioned in the introduction. I come from Wisconsin and worked here in the nonprofit world for a number of years. In 2007, I got the chance to go work for the ACLU out in Boston, and I thought it would be just for a few years at first. That turned into 10. But then after the 2016 election, I had wanted to come back to Wisconsin for family reasons already. And then after that election, it felt particularly important for me to try to come back here if I could and to help out in my home state.
What do you see? How does Wisconsin compare to other states where the ACLU is working in terms of what issues are driving the organization, what you're really focused on?
There's, with 49 other states, of course, there's a lot going on, but there are definitely some similarities and some priorities that we have across our whole organization here in Wisconsin. We are paralleling what the ACLU is doing across the country. Our focus on criminal justice reform is definitely a top priority because the United States and because Wisconsin, unfortunately, are such outliers in this way. We're spending way too much money to incarcerate people. We're tearing apart families. We're really affecting people's lives in negative ways. We want to change that and invest in safer communities and just being more supportive in general. We are working for voting rights. I appreciated the you're asking a bit about that. We're working for immigrants' rights across the country, including at the borders. Directly fighting the way that people are being turned back from making legitimate asylum claims, And we continue fighting discrimination in a variety of ways. Some other work that we've been doing here in Wisconsin has been fighting discrimination in schools, gender discrimination, racial discrimination. One of our attorneys last year did some work to get the Kenosha School District to bring an end to a cheerleading award ceremony that many people thought was kind of body shaming the young women involved in this. So we're working against discrimination here in Wisconsin and all over the United States.
Chris, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Chris Ott is executive director of the ACLU of Wisconsin. It is the country's oldest and largest civil liberties organization. Coming up, we talk with UW-Eau Claire history professor about racism and discrimination on college campuses and how communities can work together. What questions do you have about diversity, equity, and inclusion and how to change the climate where you work, where you go to school? Join in at 800-642-1234. We'll be back to talk right after this news update. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. And quick programming note here, join us at noon on the Ideas Network for Wisconsin's 40th annual tribute and ceremony honoring Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. It'll be hosted by our own Dr. Jonathan Overby, and the program includes music from the MLK Women's Mass Choir, Fall Gospel Fest Choir, and Sistus Strings with guest speaker Dr. Ollie Watts Davis. The live broadcast and celebration is coming up here at noon right here on the Ideas Network. Right now, we're talking about Dr. King's legacy and more contemporary issues surrounding race in our communities. We're zooming in on Eau Claire. Last fall, you might recall there were racist incidents on the UW-Eau Claire campus. Out of that came a task force to recommend actions to improve equity, diversity, and inclusion on campus by the end of this month. So what can college campuses do to promote cultural competence and understanding? Where do you see inclusive projects that work in your community, that work in your employer, employment? What's lacking? Join in 800-642-1234. Salika Duckworth-Lawton is a history professor at UW-Eau Claire. She's been at the university for nearly 25 years, specializing in U.S. social history, African-American history, and military history. She's president of Uniting Bridges of Chippewa County, and she serves on the executive board of the Chippewa Valley chapter of the ACLU of Wisconsin. Salika, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Well, thank you for having me.
So we saw those two incidents involving racism that happened on your campus during the fall semester, one involving a group of football players who allegedly exchanged racist messages on social media. The other was a racist message written on a dorm door. So what was your reaction to these events last fall?
Well, I mean, my reaction had a personal and a professional part to it, because I knew a number of the students who were involved. And they had taken my African-American history class, and it made me wonder, are they paying attention? Do they understand what they are learning? But it did make a number of us, and that included me, question our safety on campus and question the presence of covert racism in a way that I think we had not questioned before. And that's important because there's been so much of an emphasis on microaggression and petty acts that bringing the focus back to this kind of behavior, I think, is important for moving us forward and building more of what Martin Luther King called a beloved community.
And last month, UW-Eau Claire Chancellor, your Chancellor James Schmidt, announced this formation of a task force, a rapid action task force. What do you hope comes of it?
Well, I mean, we need to ratchet our expectations down. You're not going to solve in 1 month problems that it has taken 500 years for this country to create. They will probably take actions that will have to do with physical safety on campus. And some things that we did need to deal with, such as our bias incidents reports and how to weed out the ones that are trolling the system. So I expect for them to do some quick acts that will be helpful, but they can't in a month get at the root causes. There's parallel processes at work. There's going to be a long-term task force, and a number of faculty and staff and students have already organized to deal with it ourselves in some ways, because there's a limit to what an administrative response can do. Under state law and federal law, certain types of obnoxious speech are legal. In this case, the Snapchat was actionable because it had a physical threat within it. If it had not had a physical threat, the university may not have been able to act on it. So we need to really hit how do you de-escalate situations where you have this legal but intimidating or chilling speech.
Salika, you just mentioned bias incidents reports. What are those reports?
Well, I was on the bias incident report team 3 years ago. And students, faculty, staff, and people outside the university can report incidents of racial, sexuality, gender, et cetera, bias to the university through those reports. Now, part of the problem, though, is that we don't have a good definition of what bias means, and sometimes people report things that are legal. There are three investigators of record who have Title IX experience who legally can investigate these and separate them into founded, unfounded, or people are complaining about something that's obnoxious but legal. So there's a process that those reports have to go through before they can even make it to the investigation stage. And that's to protect people who are engaging in their rights, sometimes in manners people won't like. There are some people who think that I shouldn't be teaching about African American history. They have the right to make a complaint about that, but that's not going to go very far because that's my job. Does that make sense?
Yeah. And last month, we spoke with your chancellor, James Schmidt, about the campus climate, and he impressed that the campus is taking an urgent response. Here's some of what he said on our program.
Racism is one of the things that pushes down people, continues to remind people of our past, and continue to suggest you're not worthy of this educational experience. You're not worthy of climbing that ladder of success. That's the reason this institution has taken, frankly, such a passionate response to this.
Do you find the work happening on your campus right now, would you characterize it as a passionate response to trying to stop racial incidents, trying to stop hate incidents?
I think that my campus is planning for an effective response. I know the chancellor very well, and I do work with him. So I think there is a sense on my campus that we are tired of this happening and we want to develop a better response. There's also an understanding that a response cannot be a top-down animal, that faculty, staff, and students are going to have to be involved and educated before we can change the way we respond. We're starting a community-wide book group in part because sometimes the racial incidents that happen on our campus, well, a lot of the times, come from people coming off campus. And you can't change the campus without working with the community. We also need to understand we're not a very diverse campus and not a very diverse community. So preparing this community for that kind of diversity is one of the challenges that we have for the 21st century.
We're talking with Salika Duckworth-Lawton. She's a history professor at UW-Eau Claire. You can join in. How do you think campuses should promote equity and inclusion? What should the punishment be for racial incidents on college campuses? How do campuses heal and move forward? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Salika, you've called racism an endemic problem in our country. You've just mentioned here that in order to work together in Eau Claire, you must draw in the community and bring together the campus. How can fostering larger conversations just, you know, even outside of the university, outside your walls, how can that help, you know, you Eau Claire move forward and have a better understanding?
There's a lot of research, and I did some of it at RAND when I was there, that shows that the more segregated groups are, the more anxious they are, and the more likely they are to stereotype each other. We also know that confirmation bias means that when people stereotype, they're pretty resistant to any evidence of it except for contact, controlled contact, and the difficult conversations that we have as people. So part of this is to bring our communities together and to have difficult conversations in a civil manner, where people can see that these anxieties are not warranted and that these stereotypes are not true. The more anxious people are, the more likely they are to stereotype. And the less contact people have had with the groups that they are scapegoating, the easier it is to continue to scapegoat them. And when you look at our country, the majority of the racial anxiety, the majority of the stereotyping, the majority of the imaginary racial boogeymen who are being thrown up come from areas that are hyper-white and have very little contact. So to have those discussions with people who have actual experience, to have those discussions with people who are of the scapegoated group in a civil manner where the people who are from marginalized communities are not traumatized is a research-based way to deal with racial animosity. The Army's been doing this research really since 1951. And that's one of the reasons why the U.S. Army's Enlisted Corps and Officer Corps are the most integrated groups in the U.S. today.
We're talking with UW-Eau Claire history professor Salika Duckworth-Lawton about her views on race relations on campus, efforts to bring people together. How important is diversity to you, and what value does it bring? Have you met people from different backgrounds in that situation that fundamentally changed your outlook, your worldview? Share your story, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Back in a moment here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for a conversation about diversity, equity, and inclusion here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. And UW-Eau Claire history professor Salika Duckworth-Lawton, she's called on to talk about these issues a lot, a whole lot. And as an educator, she works at this critical intersection of race, military history, and national security. And she wants to help her students to listen to each other, especially across divides. On this MLK Day, do you find yourself listening more? What are you thinking about to improve race relations in your own community or at your own work? How do you want to talk with loved ones about privilege and biases? Join in any point, 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. And UW-Eau Claire history professor Salika Duckworth-Lawton stays with us. Let's go to the phones now. Rich is joining us from Rhinelander this morning. Hi, Rich.
Hi. I think the jigsaw puzzle that we call Wisconsin racially needs to be taught to all of us in terms of the housing patterns in Wisconsin. I've said before, and I maintain, that even though Midwesterners like to think of themselves as really nice, polite people, when you look at how we use our real estate money to live only with people who resemble us and talk like us and think like us, you reach some very interesting conclusions, which I believe the national press will come to when the Democratic convention comes to Milwaukee this July.
Well, Rich, thanks for the call. Salika, how would you respond to that, that our disparities in housing, who lives where, actually really impacts inequities?
It does. I mean, there's plenty of research. I can start with Massey, that segregation in housing flows to inequities in education, flows to our anxieties about each other, flows to stereotyping, which creates more flight or fight and causes a really ugly cycle. Now, what's difficult for that is the fact that we just saw the first kindergarten cohort where whites are a plurality instead of a majority. So whether you can't just keep running from a problem that is going to be there, this fear. And as we see more interracial marriage, especially up here at in the north, there are more people of color who are emerging in the area. So segregation is at the heart of the problem. Separation is the heart of the problem. And the fear that comes from segregation is what we have to fight.
Let's bring in another call, Marcus in Milwaukee. Hi, Marcus.
Hi. So being that it's Martin Luther King Jr. Day, brings to mind a quote my grandfather used to say to me quite often. He said, Martin Luther King Jr. Said, be the change. Martin Luther King Jr. said, it's always the right time to do the right thing. And then he followed up with Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world.
How does that impact your life personally, Marcus?
I just try to be a better person, be more outgoing, more positive, more chivalrous, catch a door at a gas station, just say hi to people. Just try to be more pleasant and spread more happiness in the world.
Marcus, thanks. Yeah, Salika, it sounds like it's the little things that really matter.
Well, we can all do the little things that individualize each other. The way we're going to fight racism is through these individual contacts, and the individual contacts grow to be communities. Martin Luther King talked about a beloved community where we love each other, we individualize each other, we don't stereotype each other. And those individual people doing that and checking ourselves when it's comfortable for us to use power to hurt someone and checking ourselves when we are justifying that using power is how we get to a beloved community.
We're talking with Salika Duxworth-Lawton. She's a history professor at UW-Eau Claire. You can join in. What are the big civil rights issues that you believe are most pressing, both here in Wisconsin and around the country? 800-642-1234. Salika, when we talked last year, you said that in many ways, Martin Luther King Jr. was the most radical civil rights leader of his generation. What about his message do you think threatened or scared people?
Well, in 1967, in his speech, What We Must Do Now, he pushed for an individual guaranteed income. He pushed for economic reforms that would reform abuse of power. He wanted to bring everyone, regardless of race, regardless of class, gender, etc., into an American citizenship. And for some people, they find that very scary. They need their scapegoats in order to feel superior. They need to feel superior. And we do need to talk about the fact that these people, these are the bullies from the schoolyard. We act like they grow out of it, and they don't always grow out of it. And as they get older, race will be one of the things they will bully on, gender they will bully on, your economic class. The loss of their economic power really did frighten people.
Last week, there was this Washington Post poll. It found that Black Americans are deeply pessimistic about the future of the country. 83% believe President Trump is a racist. 65% say it's a bad time to be a person of color. Do you have any hope that America will be truly inclusive?
Well, American history is kind of like a cha-cha. You take two steps forward, you take one back.
Okay.
And we have been in this place before. We were in this place at the turn of the century when Teddy Roosevelt was elected. We were in this place in the 1830s under Andrew Jackson and the 1866 and 67 with Andrew Johnson. And to be honest, we were in it in 1968. The thing is, our people have to make a decision. Do we want a united, strong America that stands for those values we have in the Bill of Rights? And that means everyone has to access them. Or do we want to indulge these supremacists and allow them to continue destroying our country and dividing us? We have to make that decision. This is the time when every individual American has to choose. We're either going to put our country first, or we're going to be destroyed from within. And I think that I'm not alone in, and it's not just the Black community that feels that.
Given the racist incidents that did happen late last year on your campus, what do you hope can be achieved with the campus's Martin Luther King Day celebration today?
Well, here in Eau Claire, we have a rather unique Martin Luther King program. And we're honoring four leaders, but we're also speaking King's words. And we have words from James Baldwin and from Kindi's How to Be an Anti-Racist. So we're hoping that the program today, which also includes voter registration and a number of other services, will help to bring the community and the campus together and help people to see across race, across these other identities that they have. So being in the pews and giving their opinion and also singing and holding hands with each other to bring people together is probably one of the most powerful things you can do.
Salika, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Salika Duxworth-Lawton, she is a history professor at UW-Eau Claire. She's been at the university for nearly 25 years, specializing in U.S. social history, African-American history, and military history. You're with us for The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent, and this is The Ideas Network.